From Shamokin to Waynesburg, Williamsport to Jeffersonville, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Texas recently enacted a new law giving parents and students universal school choice. State Representative Joe DeOrsi would like to give Pennsylvanians the same education freedom. He is here to discuss. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Joe Geiger has Dr. Matthew Herford from UPMC's Community Care Behavioral Health Organization in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And efforts are underway in the state legislature to improve efficiency and provide more transparency in the permitting process. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania talks about it on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to State Representative Joe DeOrsi in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The City of Philadelphia will now be requiring its Office of Legislative Affairs to work with department heads to determine the fiscal impact of proposed legislation that will come before City Council. Mayor Sherelle Parker is instituting the practice, which is standard procedure for most state and local legislative bodies. The goal is to provide an objective analysis of proposals before they are voted on and implemented. U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy visited the Navy Yard in Philadelphia this past week to tout Trump administration efforts to increase the number of ships built in the United States. Duffy pointed out that in 2022, America built 5 vessels, while China produced 1,800. Duffy told WHYY Radio in Philadelphia that we have to build more ships in America again. U.S. Senator David McCormick touted the creation of high-paying jobs that more shipbuilding would bring to the region. Commonwealth University President Bashir Hanna will step down from his post on July 31st after a recent vote of no confidence in his leadership by university faculty. He won't be out of work, though. Hanna will become Vice Chancellor for Strategic Initiatives in the Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education. The vote of no confidence came following a $3.9 million verdict against the university in a whistleblower case. Folks visiting Point State Park in Pittsburgh will be disappointed if they expect to see the park's iconic fountain. The state will be spending $3.4 million to upgrade the fountain and repair aging infrastructure. The goal is to have the fountain back in operation by next spring, when the National Football League will hold its draft in the Steel City. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Education freedom is rising across the nation, but Penns Woods is lagging behind when it comes to giving K-12 school choice options to parents and students. State Representative Joe DeOrsi has introduced legislation that would change that. He represents the 47th State House District in York County. Joe, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Joe, education freedom, of course, is front and center, both as education policy and as a budget item here in Pennsylvania. You are proposing giving students and parents universal choice and therefore empowering parents and students. Tell us a bit about your proposal.
My proposal, last session it was House Bill 1904. This session I reintroduced it under House Bill 1258. It's the Student Freedom Account Act. It's known actually nationwide, the proposal, as the most flexible universal program in the country. I've borrowed best practices from other states that have ESAs, like Arizona and Florida. And it basically gives parents the power to have their state tax dollars directed to the school of their choosing for their child. Now, there's, as you know, Loman, several school choice options that have been on the table and we've discussed the last say, decade. And in Pennsylvania, there's the EITC and OSTC business tax credits, which are always a great option. And then the Lifeline proposal, which, as you can remember, a couple budget cycles ago, the governor didn't just campaign on Lifeline scholarships, which would help the bottom 15% of achieving schools, students in those schools. But he went ahead and vetoed that proposal in the budget. Those are both great options, but my option here, the Student Freedom Account Act, is really the home run of the bunch, in my opinion.
Taking a look at that then, what is the process that you have to go through here, Joe? Obviously, the challenge is that at the moment, those who are in control of the legislative process in the House are on the other side of the issue. But what can you do to move the ball forward, at least in the interim here?
It's a good question. I'm somewhat new to the General Assembly. I was naive in coming in, Lohman, to look at the numbers on school choice, even universal school choice, and say, hey, 7 or 8 out of Pennsylvanians agree with this. Therefore, the representatives that, of course, represent this large majority of Pennsylvanians, we could get it across the finish line. But, of course, that's politically not how it happens in Harrisburg. Certainly, the PSEA, the Teachers Union, is one of the more powerful lobbies in Harrisburg. They have a tight grip on the Democratic Party. Obviously, we have Governor Josh Shapiro is a Democrat, but the House is controlled by Democrats as well, by just one seat, which is a tough pill to swallow some days. But my philosophy is, like, any chance, any shot at school choice, whether it's just a Lifeline scholarship, which is just a $100 million appropriation that helps kids in the bottom performing schools, or the whole shebang, like my Student Freedom Account Act, as long as we're moving the ball in the positive direction toward the end zone, this is definitely a long game fight, and I'm in it for the long haul.
Well, of course, change in Pennsylvania is something that always comes about very, very slowly. Focusing just for a minute or so here on these Lifeline scholarships, you referenced the fact that I'll use the term only, $100 million. For most of us, that's a lot of money, but in terms of the state budget, it's really a very minuscule amount of money. It hasn't been allocated yet. If you look at who's going to be primarily served by the Lifeline Scholarship Program, Joe, they're minorities. Isn't this something that members from the other side of the aisle should want because it's people in their districts who are going to be benefiting and uplifted by Lifeline scholarships?
It's a great point, and the answer is yes. There's a lot of schools in the Philadelphia School District with reading scores and writing and mathematics scores that are in the single digits, even 0% in some cases at the fourth grade level for reading. And by way of contrast, Lohman, I say only $100 million. Certainly that's a big number, but contrast that with the public basic ed proposed addition to this year's budget of $804 million. And then, of course, we spend, I believe the number is close to $13 billion in education in our state. So the $100 million really is a drop in the bucket. And you're right, it would help students primarily in these urban Democratic districts.
We are talking with State Representative Joe DeOrsi of York County, representing the 47th District, talking about education freedom, giving parents and students more education options. And the numbers you just put out there, Joe, that Pennsylvania is spending on public education, we keep increasing every year, sometimes by $1 billion or more. There's calls out there for billions more in public education spending. Is that really where we need to be going with this? It seems like we just keep throwing billions more. There was a whole tranche of money from the COVID era that was put into education. Is there any end game here as to when there's enough being spent?
Well, we've asked that question. What is adequate funding? You hear that oftentimes from my Democratic counterparts. We want adequate funding for public ed. Well, we spend $22,000-$23,000 per pupil on average per year in Pennsylvania. That's good for top 10 in the country. As you mentioned, we added $1.1 billion to last year's budget to education. This year, another $804 million in Governor Shapiro's proposal. If you look at the numbers from a macro sense, Lohman, we have enrollment over the last 10 or 15 years that's gone down. We've had a lot more hires of administrators and principals. But most importantly, the money has skyrocketed. Like I said, 22,000 per pupil per year on average. But the scores, reading, math, NAEP scores, all at best stagnant. But that's even being a little bit liberal. They're actually going down a little bit. So when you talk from a macro level about return on investment, I think it's abundantly obvious that just throwing more money at the problem isn't fixing it.
As you look around the country, and I'm sure that when you developed your current legislative proposal, you looked at other states. What states do you see as being stellar that we could copy some of their successes? And Joe, nationwide, is education freedom gaining ground? Is it on the move?
It's absolutely gaining ground. The momentum is really great. In fact, a couple of years ago, they called it the year of school choice, but they've kind of had to extend that mantra because each year thereafter, the momentum has also been great. In the news just this week and last, Texas is the newest state to adopt universal school choice. Wyoming and Missouri and also Tennessee. I actually had the Senate Majority Leader of Tennessee on my program a couple of weeks ago talking about their universal school choice program. But Arizona and Florida, Arizona I like to consider the progenitor of universal programs. We have the luxury here in Pennsylvania and other states to kind of learn from their growing pains. But Arizona is a great example. Florida is a really great example, too. They were just rated number one in the country in education. So it's hard to argue that their program there is not working. And further, Lohman, there was a study done a couple of years ago in Florida that measured all forms of education, private, parochial, public. And what they found is as their school choice program matured, public school outcomes got better. They were enhanced. So I think really a rising tide lifts all boats here. I've said it from the beginning, being a proponent for school choice is not anti-public school. It's just realizing our times and knowing that these Generation Z children need options.
And of course, we learned a lot about that during the COVID pandemic, and we've seen homeschooling and various options really exploding in terms of the number of students. We've been talking here about K-12 education, Joe. Let's pivot for a minute or two here and talk about higher education. There's something called non-preferreds, and this is an action the legislature must take. Can you explain to us what non-preferreds mean and how that funding and who that funding goes to?
Sure. So non-preferreds, or you'll hear it referred to as state-related, it's the same thing. Constitutionally, in Pennsylvania, it's unique. The funding for these schools, which are comprised of Pitt, Penn State, Temple, Lincoln, and Penn Vet, just the veterinary school at University of Pennsylvania, they require two-thirds of the General Assembly to adopt or vote yay on their funding proposal. So it's really a point of contention, especially in the House, with the close Democrat margin in the House, because Republicans really can hold the line since two-thirds is required. We can kind of put our foot down and try to use that as a negotiating chip. So a couple of years ago, we held up funding for Pitt specifically, us Republicans, until pretty late into the fall. In fact, I don't think it was entirely tied up until December. But they get hundreds of millions of dollars in state appropriations, and that's back on the chopping block this summer.
The House Freedom Caucus, of which you are a member, has raised some concerns with these institutions of higher learning relative to the legislative approval of funding. What's at play there?
Well, there's always reasons, in my book, to oppose funding for the universities, whether it's free speech, whether it's horrific experiments on mice, as I'm sure you've covered in past episodes, with aborted fetal remains. But there's also, we're enjoying the headwinds of the Trump presidency right now on this topic, Lohman, is the genital reassignment surgery and corresponding treatment. UPMC, which is Pitt's medical facility, has already pledged to end their program. Penn State just the other week followed suit. But what remains is the University of Pennsylvania, which has a health system, and Temple. So we've said as a Freedom Caucus, look, we're open to funding these universities if all of the affiliated health systems not just say that they're going to end these procedures and these treatments, but actually we see evidence that they're decommissioning the departments.
Going up to the 30,000-foot level here as we end our interview, Joe, the state budget. Governor Shapiro has proposed, about a 9% increase in state spending. Where are we in the process? We do have a deadline. Are things moving forward? And what is the position of the Republican caucus in the House on this budget?
I think generally speaking, a $51.47 billion proposal is pretty widely considered in the Republican caucus as unsustainable. It spends down our reserves, our rainy day fund, and our surplus pretty quickly. And that translates in no more than a couple of years to a tax increase, which we will stand against. It's important to note, though, that was just his initial proposal. So we're in the process of whittling that down and negotiating. Really, the key players, though, Lohman, are Senate Republicans, House Democrats, and the governor. Like I had mentioned before, us Republicans in the House are in the minority, so as far as having a say at the negotiating table, we're kind of left out of the loop. Certainly someone as a second-term Republican isn't at that table, but I know that we're in session next week, and we'll probably start to see bills that we'll be considering or trading this budget season.
We have again been talking with State Representative Joe DeOrsi of York County. He represents the 47th State Legislative District. Joe, we talked about your proposal for universal school choice, your efforts to help give parents and students more education freedom. If folks would like to learn more, where can they find you and information on the web?
Yeah, so I'm on Facebook and Instagram under my name, Representative Joe DeOrsi. I think it's Rep Joe D. Likewise, my website is repjoed.com, and you can also find me on X at Joe D for PA.
State Representative Joe DeOrsi. Joe, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Lohman.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month. To learn more about the importance of mental health, Joe Geiger has Dr. Matthew Herford, the president and CEO of UPMC's Community Care Behavioral Health Organization, in the Community Benefit Spotlight.
Thank you, Lohman, and thank you, Dr. Herford, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program. Dr. Herford, you're the Vice President of Behavioral Health for the UPMC Insurance Services and a whole lot of other things. You're very well credentialed in the topic we're going to talk about. Let's start with something very basic. What defines mental health illness?
It really refers to our emotional health and well-being, but it has so many impacts on how we work and play and everything. It can affect everything from our energy level to our sleep. So it covers really a range of everything from our human emotions to also how we think, concentrate, remember, and perceive the world around us. Certainly coming out of the COVID pandemic, we experienced, I think, kind of all of us and part of our society, a collective trauma of sorts. We all went through this really difficult experience. But one of the silver linings was that it got people talking, I think, a lot more openly about their own mental health. And that's really a positive thing. And so while it's true, we're certainly seeing an increase in demand for mental health treatment services. People are more likely to get care, whether that's virtually or in a clinic. And that may reflect that some people are experiencing more stress, more anxiety, more depression. It's also probably related to the fact that we've got more people feeling comfortable asking for that treatment, asking for that help. Now, historically, we've known that most people who have an addiction or a mental health challenge never get treatment for those conditions. And that's despite the fact that almost one in four Americans will experience some form of a mental health condition in their lives. And so the fact that more people are getting care, that we're talking more openly as a community and as a culture about it, I think it's a positive thing because there are some really effective treatments out there, not just medications, but also psychotherapy, talk therapy, and even a bunch of things that don't require going to a therapist or a doctor at all, things that you can do on your own, like exercise, meditation, getting good sleep that can have a significantly positive impact on your mental health.
But it seems to me as I'm aging, I see people and I chat with people who we have some of the common traits that might define some of what you just described, but nobody feels like they need to get a consultant or a psychologist or a therapist. Everybody else is crazy, but not me. Do you find that?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. But, you know, I think the same is true of our physical health, right? I mean, plenty of people will have a problem with their knee or maybe their back bothers them and they'll say, well, it's nothing I need to go see a doctor for. It's just part of getting old, or this is like a sports injury, or this is just my trip knee. And that really is an individual choice. But in the same way that we have all sorts of treatment like physical therapy and other things that might be helpful for that physical condition, we also have lots of great treatments available for that mental health condition. And so ultimately, it really comes down to that individual choice. Is this thing that I'm worrying about, or is this problem with my mood, or the fact that I think I'm maybe drinking more than I want to be, is that interfering with the things that make me most happy in life, like my relationships or my work or my ability just to enjoy my hobby?
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program, and my guest today is Dr. Matthew Herford, who's the Vice President of Behavioral Health at UPMC Insurance Services and a whole lot of other things. Dr. Herford, this month is going to be National Mental Health Awareness Month. What's the focus of that designation, and what are we trying to achieve?
Well, as a country, we've been observing Mental Health Awareness Month ever since 1948. And while we at UPMC feel that mental health is important every month of the year, this year's theme for Mental Health Awareness Month from the organization Mental Health America is putting awareness into action.
There's a saying that knowledge is power, but I contest that. I say that knowledge isn't power, action is power. And you can find out a whole lot of things if you put yourself into action and collect them that would have never occurred to you at the front end of it.
Absolutely. And so this is a great time, use Mental Health Awareness Month to maybe reach out to a loved one that you notice has been struggling. Maybe they've gone through a recent loss, change in career, end of a relationship, something like that. And ask the question, hey, how are you doing? And educate yourself about what the resources are in your community. If you're a UPMC Health Plan member, you can go to our website or call the number on the back of your card. That's true for most people, whether they're on Medicaid, Medicare, or commercial insurance. And do the same for yourself.
How do you recognize issues in mental health? Sometimes they're just so out there that it might not be mental health. It just might be that someone's a little different in how they approach things. When do you step in and suggest to someone, you know, maybe we ought to go see somebody?
Well, this is a great question and one that gets asked a lot. And what I'd say is it's always better to err on the side of concern. And if you're reaching out to somebody and asking how they're doing and doing it from a place of caring, it's really hard to go wrong. But what most professionals will say is that it's when those stressors or when that problem starts to interfere with your ability to function in life. And in the same way that we don't expect people to be orthopedic surgeons and know whether that pain in their back is just a normal sign of wear and tear or might be something else, we shouldn't expect people to be psychiatrists or psychologists if they're not trained that way.
Dr. Herford, you're a real treasure of information in this field. This is Joe Geiger in the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest is Dr. Matthew Herford. Dr. Herford, if somebody listening to this program would like to touch base with you for whatever, how can they find you?
I work for UPMC Health Plan. My information is online. I am also on various social media. And what I encourage folks to do is if they are interested in getting care or getting treatment, you know, talk with your primary care doctor, or if you have a relationship with a therapist, reach out. May is a great time of year for people to take that step.
Gosh, I appreciate you being a guest on the program again. Thank you for being that person out there that cares about what people go through and help them. Good to have you. Back to you, Loman.
Pennsylvania's cumbersome and slow permitting process frustrates economic development efforts, but lawmakers are working to reform the system. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has details on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
This year, the term DOGE, or Department of Government Efficiency, has been splashed all over the mainstream media. What does it mean for government to run efficiently? Well, in the world of Washington, that means that taxpayers in every corner of our country have greater oversight into how our hard-earned resources are spent, avoiding new regulations, partisan pet projects, and more. In Harrisburg, the principle remains the same. What if we had a government that worked for us, the hardworking taxpayer? What if, instead of allowing the bureaucratic process, one that moves at a glacial pace to determine the rate in which we can build, create, practice, and thrive in Pennsylvania, we had mechanisms in place to ensure that our government was working efficiently to deliver permits throughout the Commonwealth? With efficiency in mind, leaders in the Harrisburg legislature are continuing to bring to the forefront ideas that will allow Pennsylvania to compete with our neighboring states and send a signal: Pennsylvania is open for business. Last year, during the 2024 budget negotiations, the legislature found bipartisan agreement around some measures of Senator Kristen Phillips Hill's transparency in permitting legislation. The SPEED program, or Streamlining Permits for Economic Expansion and Development, requires that the Department of Environmental Protection provide a tracker to monitor the process of permits. This is a great start, and the senator's bill, SB 6, will continue to champion this issue as she advocates for the same mechanism included in the SPEED program to apply to all state agencies. This legislation, if enacted, would put necessary pressure on state bureaucrats to put efficiency at the forefront of the agency and deliver transparency for business owners, practitioners, and taxpayers at large. For Pennsylvania's landowners, there's also a renewed enthusiasm for streamlining the permitting process with respect to the Department of Environmental Protection's Chapter 105 General Permit Process. Representative Charity Krupa of Fayette County has begun circulating a memo to achieve the following goals. 1. Create a unified online application system so that applicants can submit project details to a single platform. Standardize DEP-approved permit drawings to simplify the submission of project designs. Develop an instant notice to proceed, granting applicants the ability to instantly build once the application is validated and payment has been submitted. And finally, provide statewide consistency in enforcement, as there is currently no standardized enforcement for DEP inspectors across regions. These reforms move the needle on making Pennsylvania competitive. Pennsylvania is currently the 14th most regulated state in the nation, and we must do better. As our neighboring states to the west and to the south continue to build on meaningful regulatory reform efforts, we further incentivize our Pennsylvania population to move to greener pastures. Instead of driving out our population and encouraging businesses to go elsewhere, we can urge Harrisburg to drive meaningful permitting reform policy that ensures Pennsylvania is prioritizing transparency and efficiency and guaranteeing that we send a strong signal that PA is open for business. Learn more about how you can get involved in our movement for more. Head to AmericansForProsperity.org to take action. This is Emily Green, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 30 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WBRX-FM and WKMC-AM in Altoona, along with WMCE-FM in Erie, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.